Chapter 17. Langston asked Cianese simple questions as they drove, just as he had after rescuing her from the city after the incident at the bistro. But Cianese only stared out the window, watching buildings as they passed, unable to find a drop of conversation in her. After a few blocks, Langston started chatting about the weather and the university library, which had recently accumulated a large collection of American newspapers, which he claimed to be more honest than the British ones. Cianese pressed up against the window as the automobile passed the street she would have turned onto to get to the Mill Squats in Whitechapel, where her family lived. Her father would be at work right now, her mother preparing dinner, her sister Zena out with friends, trying to use up as much free time as possible before the school year began. Marshall would likely be curled up on the couch with a book, and Margot would be outside playing in the dirt, searching for worms or building castles. Outside, where anyone could see her. Cianese had to warn them. "Could you take me to the Mill Squats, please?" Cianese pleaded as Langston stopped for a woman crossing the street.
"I'm sorry,"
Langston replied, and he really did look sorry. He also looked like he wanted to put a padlock on the passenger side door.
"Magician Thane asked me to take you straight home. Are you worried about your family?"
Cianese sank into the chair. "Yes."
"They'll be safe,"
Langston said, guiding the automobile forward.
"Magician Thane is thorough, and if criminal affairs is involved, they're probably already at the house, getting things in order."
Cianese nodded, but the young folder's words could only comfort her so much. They were a threadbare blanket against a winter storm. No matter how tightly Cianese wrapped it around herself, she could do nothing about the holes. Langston drove down a street not too far from the Parliament building, one lined with townhouses on one side and vanity stores on the other. The townhouses, tan, white, gray, even salmon pink, all stood 5 stories tall, and all pressed up one against another so that not even an ant could wriggle its way between them. Langston parked in front of a coffee-brown townhouse trimmed with black and came around the automobile to let Cianese out. He offered his elbow, but she shook her head and followed him inside on her own. Langston lived on the 2nd floor, and the interior of his home surprised Cianese, though she couldn't explain why. He had a large living room that bled into a small dining room, all with a wooden floor coated in a shiny walnut polish. Electric lights hung from the ceiling in single-tiered chandeliers, and wide windows framed by cream-colored curtains added more brightness. The living room had a fainting couch, a wicker chair, and an upright pianoforte. A simple, half-filled bookshelf occupied the wall where the dining room started, and the dining room was equipped with a well-crafted wooden table and 6 chairs. Around the corner one way was a small kitchen, and around the corner the other way stretched a winding set of stairs to the 2nd floor. It all looked very clean, very tidy, and, compared to Emery's crowded cottage, somewhat sparse. That had to be it then. Cianese had grown so accustomed to Emery, who used every last inch of space in his home for knick-knacks and pointless decor, that Langston's townhouse felt empty. It felt temporary. And for her, it was. Or so she hoped. Langston showed her upstairs to the guest bedroom, which measured twice the size of her room at the cottage. It had a large square window with a wide sill on the far wall, a closet cut into the closest wall, a short nightstand painted with purple lilies around the edges, and a bed wide enough for 3 people.
"There's a lavatory down the hall, and there are some clothes in the closet," he said, gesturing to it. "My sister stayed with me a few weeks ago and left some things behind. She's about your size, maybe a little bigger. You're welcome to try them on."
"Thank you," Cianese managed. She tugged uneasily at her right index finger, receiving a quiet pop in return. Langston searched for something else to say, but seemed at a loss for words. "Could I at least get my dog?" Cianese asked. "I left him at the flat."
"I really am sorry," Langston said, "but you need to stay here. It won't be for long, I promise."
Cianese nodded, and Langston stepped out of the room. As soon as she was alone, Cianese walked over to the window, but despite the warmth of the room, she didn't open it.
She looked out onto the city, from the small trees planted along the road to the women in posh hats and men chatting over cigars. They all seemed so happy, so oblivious. Sighing, she slumped to her knees, resting her elbows and chin on the windowsill. Emery still harbored hard feelings toward her, and he had every right. Delilah did too. And Magician Avioski. Only Magician Hughes had commended her for her stupidity, and his compliments only rubbed salt into burns. Her mind spun, trying to sort out how to make amends, but she found no answers. Nothing better than apologies, which had done her no good so far. Langston knocked on the door.
"Here, this will help with that bruise," he said.
He handed her a bag filled with confetti, much like the confetti Emery kept in his icebox. The bag felt cold beneath Cianni's fingers.
"Thank you," she said.
Langston departed with a nod, and Cianni pressed the bag to her cheek, wincing at the soreness beneath her skin. She must look dreary. She thought about cooking something, if only to thank Langston for his patience, but she found herself without the motivation. Langston, being a sweet man, did bring her some biscuits and honey at 6:15. She ate slowly, and not much at all. Her stomach felt too tight, despite her long stint without food, though she did guzzle the glass of water he brought with the biscuits. She chewed almost mechanically, thinking of her family and Delilah, thinking of Emery. She stayed up until midnight and slept only in fits, her mind cycling between grass threats and her shadowy memories of Saraj from the paper mill, the night of the buggy crash, and the market. She thought about Grath's words.
"It's all in the material. Those blasted sealing words."
But no one could break a bond, Cianni knew. That had been drilled into her at Tagus Praff. For choosing a material, those who had the option of choosing, at least, was a critical and final decision in the career of a magician. Somewhere in the timeline of his life, Grath had bonded to glass without proper authority, a felony in and of itself, and that bond couldn't be revoked. When Cianni finally fell asleep, she dreamed of mirrors, of Emery, and of Grath, on and off, until the rising sun finally gave her an excuse to get out of bed. The next morning, Cianni did find a pale blue blouse that fit. Most of the skirts were both too wide and too long to sit comfortably on her, but she found a light gray one in the back of the closet that fell to mid-calf, shorter than what Cianni typically preferred. It must have been only knee-length on Langston's sister, which made Cianni believe she had to belong to the Liberal Party, for no conservative woman would show so much leg, stockings or no. But Cianni's own skirt had been terribly soiled, so she pulled on the new skirt and used a hairpin to tighten the waistband in the back. She combed out her hair, but without any spare pins or barrettes, she could only braid it over her shoulder. Downstairs, she found Langston eating a bowl of plain oatmeal at the dining table and reading the science section of the newspaper, with a headline that read, "Polymaker invents cake-like polystyrene plastic. Unsure how to enchant." He glanced up when Cianni approached and thoroughly wiped his mouth.
"Have you heard from him?"
Cianni asked. Langston shook his head.
"I'm afraid not. Can I get you some breakfast?"
Cianni glanced at the oatmeal, which looked overcooked, and said,
"I could cook something if you'd like. I don't mind. What do you have?"
Langston stared at her, dumbfounded, for a moment.
Well, there's flour in the cupboard."
Cianni managed a genuine smile. "I'll do some exploring." She rummaged through the kitchen, pleased to see that Langston owned a full-sized stove. The man had mismatched ingredients, but Cianni whipped together some fried tomatoes, salted mushrooms, poached eggs, and some black pudding, albeit not her best batch of it. Langston didn't seem to notice. He thought the tomatoes alone were a treat, and Cianni determined the man needed to get married right away. She wondered if Delilah could be coerced into dating him. She kept the thoughts to herself. "So," Cianni said when they had finished eating and silence had settled in. She pinched the fabric of her skirt in her fingers, trying to slide it down her legs, Not that the folder could see them, what with the table and all. What have you been working on? That meeting, you said, got cancelled? He glanced up from the newspaper. When I first met you, she finished. He thought for a moment, then straightened.
Oh, yes, I recall. It was a meeting with Shanae Mueller and the PRAF Academic Board, actually. We rescheduled it for the following day.
CNE nodded, trying not to frown at the mention of Shanae Mueller. His name was attached to the most prestigious scholarship one could win for the Tagus PRAF School for the Magically Inclined, the very scholarship CNE had lost after dumping a pitcher of very expensive wine on the man's lap. He'd deserved it, after trying to get a hand up her skirt. One of the many reasons CNE preferred her skirts long. She tugged on the fabric again. For the scholarship?
Langston shook his head in the negative.
Oh, no, just for the academic schedule. Tagus PRAF is considering adding a folding class to its second semester courses to spur interest in paper-based magic. The shortage and all.
A required class? Sini asked. The workload at Tagus PRAF had been nearly suffocating during her year there. Surely they wouldn't add more to the curriculum.
Well,
Langston began, playing with the corner of his newspaper.
I think it would do better as an extracurricular course without a grading system, something for interested students to enroll in, should they choose. But Professor Mueller thinks they won't attend unless it's a required class, or for extra credit.
And you would teach it?
Supposedly, Langston said. Or perhaps we could make it an assembly of sorts, a career day, maybe. I'd only be showing basic craft, something to spike interest. Animation, fortune charms, starlights, those sorts of things.
CNE released her skirt. Starlights?
You don't know them?
Langston asked.
Well, they're small, almost plush-looking stars that light up. Quite nice for birthday parties or power outages. We get those a lot in the city.
CNE grinned. Margot would love something like that. Could you show me, please?
Well, certainly. I could use the practice.
He looked at his newspaper for a moment, considering it, but ultimately stood from the table and moved to the desk in the living room, which held several stacks of paper. He selected some rectangular sheets in yellow and pink and a pair of scissors and returned to the table.
Well, you cut a strip,
he said, slicing off the long side of a yellow piece of paper. Does the size matter?
No, I don't think so,
he said, finishing his strip.
And then you make a dog ear fold. Do you know a dog ear fold yet?
Just make them, CNE said, and I'll watch. Langston nodded, seeming relieved, and proceeded to fold the star, his stubby fingers creasing the folds well. He folded part of the strip into a sort of knot, but didn't give the folds a hard crease. He formed a small pentagon, wrapping the remaining paper around it like a bandage and tucking in the end to leave the shape clean. He then, carefully, and with his smallest fingers, pressed in each side of the pentagon until it formed a star. He held the starlight in his hand and said,
"Glow."
As though he had lit a match within the paper, the star began to softly glow from within. CNE had to cup her hands around it to see, what with the bright morning light, but the soft light of the star remained steady until Langston said,
"Cease."
"Charming," CNE said. "I'd like to try, if you don't mind." CNE cut a strip and copied Langston's movements from memory, though she had to pause twice to ask questions about the steps Langston's large hands had obscured during the folding process. When she had finished, she held a small, softly gleaming pink star in her hands. So simple, yet beautiful. "This would make a wonderful necklace, were it not so fragile," she commented. She wondered if the starlight would still glow if she glossed it the way Emery had glossed her barrette. Thoughts of Emery dulled her cheer, and she ordered the star, "Cease." Langston shifted in his chair. Do you have any firearms? Cianney asked, setting the star down. In secondary school, when she had been upset over something, sometimes her father would take her into the countryside to shoot off his shotgun. The pull and thunder always helped empty her mind. Langston paled.
Well, I'm not supposed to let you out of the house, you see, and you can't use one in here.
He rubbed the back of his neck.
I'm not good with lessons. Not yet, anyway. But I have some books you could read. Perhaps you'll discover something else Magician Thane hasn't taught you.
Perhaps, Cianney agreed, slouching in her chair. I'll browse for myself, if you don't mind.
Of course.
Pushing back from the table, Cianney collected the dishes, washed them in silence, and picked through books until she found not a textbook, but a copy of Jane Eyre. When Langston wasn't looking, she snatched a sheet of paper and a pen from the top of his desk and retired to the guest room upstairs. Sitting on her bed and leaning against the novel, Cianney wrote on the paper, I need you to trust me and leave the house. Go anywhere. Take a vacation. I'll send you the money. Please hurry. She reread her words and chewed on her bottom lip. For all she knew, criminal affairs had yet to take action, or they had decided to use her family as bait to draw out Grath and Saraj. The idea made her stomach churn. It wouldn't take long for the men to follow through on their threats, and for Saraj, all it would take was one touch. She thought of the buggy driver and shivered. She slinked down to the floor and folded the paper against it until she had formed a paper crane. Breathe, she said. The paper bird stretched out its wings and lifted its triangular head to her. She recited her address to it. If no one is home, come straight back here so I know, she said. The bird bobbed in her hand. Cianney opened her window just wide enough to slip the bird out. It launched over the street below, its white body shrinking out of sight as it flew over the next row of townhouses. Cianney sighed and closed the window. She hated not knowing. Leaning on the sill, she peered down to the street lined with gaffer lamps, tempted to rip a page from Jane Eyre to make a quick telescope. She searched for buggies, searched for a man in an indigo coat, but he did not come.
I am angry with you.
Cianney pressed her forehead to the glass. I'm sorry, she whispered. She didn't know how else to get the message through. I was stupid. I didn't think. I'm sorry that I endangered Delilah and Magician Hughes and you. Please believe me. If I could go back in time and stop myself, I would. I love you. She touched her cheek, prodding the healing bruise there. She had deserved that much. She waited at the window for a long time, watching the people pass by, holding her breath whenever a rented buggy came down the street. But Emery still didn't come.